the Via Dolorosa Rosa in Jerusalem that day. The soldiers tried to clear that narrow street, but the crowd pressed in to see this man condemned to die on Calvary.
But I want to talk about the Via Dolorosa, which is a term that's not in the Bible. So we got to understand that. But it is the name of the path that Jesus supposedly took from Fort and was it Fort and Antonia, I think it's how you say it, the fortress, where that's where Pontius Pilate was. From there, when Pontius Pilate delivered him over to be crucified, that was the route he took, basically on three streets, I think, maybe some alleys, narrow roads. He took this path to Golgotha. It's about a mile long, I believe. So it starts at Antonio Fortress, ends at Golgotha. And today, I want to take us on a tour. I want us to walk the route. I wish I could take us to Israel so we could do so. We can't do that, so we're going to have to use our imaginations today, much like how Dan talked about during the communion time, just the juice and the bread, and use your senses. And I think I'm trying to tap into that as well, that we would use our senses today and experience what Jesus experienced. Starts at station one. Station one, where Jesus is condemned by Pontius Pilate. So we put ourselves there at the fort, the fortress, which today I believe is a schoolyard. If you went to Israel today, you would be standing in a schoolyard. This is where it starts. Let me read John 18, verse 28. I want to read a lot of the story here for us. John 18, verse 28. Then the Jews led Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning. And to avoid the ceremonial uncleanliness, the Jews did not enter the palace. They wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and he asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" "If he was not a criminal," they replied, "we would not have handed him over to you." Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own laws." "But we have no right to execute anyone," the Jews objected. This happened so that the words that Jesus had spoken, indicating the kind of death he was going to die, would be fulfilled. Verse 33, Pilate then went back inside the palace, and he summoned Jesus, and he asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked, "or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate asked. "It was your people and your chief priest who handed you over to me. What is it you've done?" Jesus says, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You are right in saying I'm a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of the truth listens to me." "What is truth?" Pilate asked in a mocking way. This is what I'm thinking. Because he turns away and he walks off. What is truth? Pilate doesn't want to hear what truth is. And with this, he goes back out to the crowd. He says, "I find no basis for a charge against him. But it is your custom for me to release to you one of the prisoners at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Now Barabbas had taken part in a rebellion. It goes on in the next chapter, chapter 19. Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. And then the soldiers, they twisted together a crown of thorns, and they put it on his head, and they clothed him in a purple robe, and they went to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they struck him in his face. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews, "Look, I'm bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." when Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." And as soon as the chief priests and the officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify! Crucify!" And Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." The Jews insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God." And when Jesus heard this, he was even more afraid. And he went back inside the palace. "Where do you come from?" he asked Jesus, but Jesus gave him no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You'd have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jews kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at the place known as the stone pavement. It was a day of preparation of Passover week, about the sixth hour. "Here is your king," Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, "Take him away, take him away, crucify him." "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priest answered. And finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. There's a whole lot to take in at this one station, at the beginning point of our journey, of this tour that we're going on. We see here that Jesus was brought to Pilate, and to understand what happened before this moment, Jesus is tired. Jesus has been up all night. He's been being interrogated by the chief priest in the Sanhedrin. Even before that, he was sweating drops of blood. He's been mocked. He's been falsely accused. He's been hit. He's been spat on. And now, in the early morning hours, now he's standing before Pilate. And people are demanding to put him to death. And verse 1 of 19, this is about midway of everything I read, about midway, you see that Pilate has him flogged. He says, "I find him innocent, but flog him anyway." He has him flogged. And the soldiers, you saw what the soldiers were doing. The soldiers were mocking him. They were hitting him. They were spitting on him. Put a crown of thorns on his head, making fun of him. And then Pilate says, "How about this? You know, how about I release him? You know, this is our custom. We release a prisoner." And they say, "No, we want Barabbas. We want Barabbas." Think about the worst criminal in jail, and that's who they're asking for right there. So he releases Barabbas, and he finds Jesus innocent. Over in Matthew, It even says he washes his hands of it. "I wash my hands of this." He's innocent. "I wash my hands of this." And then he continues to sentence him to death. Pilate handed him over to them so he could be crucified. That's what happened at Station 1. You got to cross the street to go over to Station 2. So it's not a long journey. You know, just cross the street, and there, this is where Jesus receives his cross. John 19, verse 16. Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. So the soldiers took charge of Jesus. Carrying his own cross, he went out to the place of the skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha. I don't want to rush this. I want us to take some time here. We're at Station 2. And I don't know that there's a cross on the ground, you know, symbolic of what happened. But when you get to Station 2 and you just think, what was Jesus thinking when he saw that cross? And they say, "Pick it up. Pick it up." That's your cross. Another thing I'd point out here in verse 19, Pilate had notice prepared and fastened to the cross. It read, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. So we go from station one to station two, and now we begin this long walk. Station three, and I don't know how far along the route it is, and it's not recorded in the Bible, but it says in station three, Jesus falls under the weight of the cross. And that's not hard to imagine. I mean, considering everything that Jesus has already gone through, considering he has not slept, he's probably not eaten. I go back, he was sweating drops of blood, he was praying, and how intense and how exhausting that had to be. And then from that, staying up all night and having everybody yelling at him and hitting him and falsely accusing him. And then he's been flogged already. That's already happened. And now they say, pick up the cross. Can you imagine how weak he must have been? Station four. Jesus meets his mother. Well, it's found in John 19. This is what it says in John 19. Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother, his mother's sister, Mary, and the wife of Clopas, and Mary of Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there, and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, Dear woman, here is your son. And to the disciple, here is your mother. From that time on, this disciple took her into his home. Now, in case I read that too fast, let me see if I can give you a better picture. He sees his mother, and as if indicating, here's the disciple he loved, which is John. It's always John. So, here is your son now. And John, this is your mother now. Mary, you take care of John. John, you take care of Mary. That's what's going on here. Now imagine. Being the mother of Jesus at this point and seeing his bloodied body, seeing his broken body, knowing where he was going, seeing the soldiers as they're beating him and whipping him and making him continue down this journey. Imagine her anguish, watching what they're doing to her son on the Via Dolorosa. Seeing the blood, seeing the pain, seeing the hate in the eyes of the crowd, knowing where he was headed, knowing what was to come. Imagine her crying, no, no, don't do this to my son. Please, God, save my son. And if you can imagine what she's going through, now imagine what Jesus is going through, seeing his mother going through that. I mean, what son wouldn't want to spare his mother of such anguish? If only he could. If only he could stop this so his mother would not be broken like this. And he could have stopped it. Imagine being Jesus and seeing this happen to his mother. And holding back because he knows what he had to do. And we get to station five. Station five is Simon of Cyrene. This is where he helps Jesus carry the cross. Not because he wanted to. He was ordered to. It says it in Luke 23. As they led him away, they seized Simon from Cyrene, who was on his way in from the country. And they put the cross on him, and they made him carry it behind Jesus. Now, Simon of Cyrene, just an innocent bystander, a foreigner. He's from North Africa, and for some reason, doing business, he's on his way to Jerusalem. He's going into the city. Everybody else is coming out of the city. He's going into the city. He's going the opposite direction, minding his own business. And the Roman soldiers grab him and seize him and force him to get involved. He didn't want to get involved. They force him to assist an innocent man in carrying his cross to death. Imagine being Simon of Cyrene. Imagine if that was you. Now, I'll give you a little bit more information here, Simon or Cyrene. And it says in Mark chapter 15, he's the father of Alexander and Rufus. I don't know who Alexander and Rufus is, but the way it's written, it's everybody else seemed like they did. Like they, you know, the church obviously knew who Alexander and Rufus is. We're talking about their father, Simon of Cyrene. He's the one who they made carry the cross. Well, the way they say that, it's as if to imply, you know, that the church knew who they were talking about. Because these people had become believers. These people had become followers of Jesus. Maybe even leaders in the church. And perhaps because of this encounter with Jesus, maybe this is what changed their lives around. So that's the story of Simon of Cyrene. And then we get to station 6, which is Veronica. I don't know what to tell you about Veronica. She's not in the Bible. It's a tradition that dates back to the 14th century. I'm not going to talk about that one. Read that one yourself. I do know there's a gift stand right there at where Veronica is. It seems like a money-making thing to me. Anyway, but we continue our journey. Did I say the Via Dolorosa? You know what that means? The way of grief, the way of suffering. That's why it's named that, the way of pain. So we continue, and we get to station number 7. And Jesus falls a second time. But he gets up and he continues. Then we get to station 8. This is called the station where Jesus speaks to the daughters of Jerusalem. The passage is found in Luke 23. Verse 27, a large number of people followed him, including the women who mourned and wailed for him. I want you to notice, this is not a small crowd making their way to Golgotha. It says a large crowd followed. A large crowd. And in that crowd, I'm thinking, why are they following? Are they following because they want to make sure he dies? Are they following because they think maybe he will do something to save himself? Are they following because they cared? Are they following because they hated him? Why are they following him? But it was a large crowd. A large crowd was following. And included in that large crowd were women who mourned and wailed for him. And then I got to think, why were they mourning? Why were they wailing? Why did they care? Was it because they just see an innocent man being crucified and this is wrong? Or they knew this man. This man had ministered to them. This man had touched their lives. This man had healed them. This man was everything to them. Why were they crying? It doesn't give us too much more details about who these women are, but look what happens here in verse 28. This is Luke 23, verse 28. Jesus turned and said to them, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me. Weep for yourselves and for your children." Don't weep for me. Here, what? Look at this is what you got to identify with here. Look at what's going on. Look at what's happening. Look at what they're doing to Jesus. It's horrible what they are doing to Jesus. And I want you to see this. This is horrible, and we know this. This is horrible what they're doing to Jesus. But look at what Jesus is doing. Jesus said, don't weep for me. He turns it on them. Weep for yourselves and for your children. He's concerned. He's not concerned about himself. He's concerned about them. He says, "For the time will come when you will say, 'Blessed are the barren women and the wombs that they have never bore and the breasts that have never nursed. Blessed are those who've never brought children to this world.'" Now, this is a reference to what's going to happen 40 years from this point. It happened in 70 AD, the famous time when the Roman general Titus. He comes in and squashes a Jewish rebellion. It happened in 70 AD. Josephus records that Titus showed no mercy. The children and the women and the priest were all slain and left for dead in the streets. Thousands were crucified. There was actually a shortage of crosses. Here you're crying because you're seeing me being crucified. And Jesus is saying, I can see what's going to happen 40 years from now. I can see women and children and priests and all these people being crucified because of the rebellion that the Jewish when they rose up and there was no mercy. Titus showed no mercy. Thousands were crucified, millions were slaughtered, 100,000 were sold into slavery, according to Josephus. And Jesus was concerned about them. Don't weep for me, weep for yourselves. Listen, this is what it says here, verse 30. It says, then they will say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if men do these things when the tree is green, basically, if men do these things while God is present with them, what will happen when it is dry? What will happen to these people when the presence of God is removed from them? And that's what, by God's grace, they had 40 years to respond to the gospel by his grace. And after that 40 years, this was the wrath of God coming out through Titus to these people who removed God from their presence. But Jesus was concerned for them. He was concerned for them. Then we get to station 9. Jesus falls a third time. But he gets up. And he keeps going. The picture I chose on this here is a picture actually taken from one of the chapels nearby. Is that actually nearby the station 3? Well, the angels are all watching. I don't know if you can see it in the picture, but in the background there's angels there watching helplessly as Jesus falls. Now they weren't helpless. They could have came in and destroyed everybody, but they were held back. They had to be held back. They couldn't help. And Jesus somehow picks up his cross and he keeps going. And we get to station 10, which is basically Golgotha. I'm not sure they know exactly where Golgotha was. At this place, they've built a chapel there. It's called the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which means the Church of the Tomb. But at this point, station 10, Jesus is stripped of his garments. Mark 15:24, they crucified him, dividing up his clothes. And they cast lots to see what each would get. So we get to station 10. And imagine what's going on at this station right here. Just what the soldiers were doing to him. How the soldiers, they didn't care about. Here, Jesus is bleeding, and he's suffering, and he's hurting, and he's getting ready to be crucified, and the soldiers are callously gambling over some piece of clothing, oblivious to the suffering of a fellow human being. They don't care. They care more about the clothes than they care about the human being. Then we move on to station 11. So they nailed Jesus to the cross. And I'm really curious at this point, knowing who Jesus is, knowing what Jesus came to do, knowing what this was about, did Jesus Did Jesus just willfully put out his hands and say, here they are? Or was it just, you know, his body, just the reflexes of his body, he was trying to hold back? Did he cry? Did he scream? Did he yell? Can you imagine the pain that he experienced right then? It says in Luke 23, verse 33, two other men, both criminals, they were also led out with him to be executed. And they went, when they came to the place called the Skull, there they crucified him along with the criminals, one on his right and the other on his left, which was the Old Testament prophesied this in Isaiah 53, that he would be crucified with criminals. And then Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Once again, just stop and think about this. They just nailed him to the cross. And between two criminals, we're going to talk about them in a minute, but they nailed him to a cross. And as they're nailing him to a cross, and I'm thinking, is he fighting? What's going on? He's praying. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing. Now, that's got to be a new one for everybody. You know, I'm sure there's times when they've crucified people to the cross, and they've heard people speak of God before as they're being crucified. Maybe they're crying out to God. Maybe they're cursing God. Maybe they're pleading, or maybe they're crying out, Lord, kill these people, avenge me. But they've never heard anybody cry, Father, forgive them. Who is this man? He pleads for mercy for those who are doing this to him because they don't know what they're doing. He's begging God to forgive his executioners because they don't know what they're doing. And it goes on in verse 35, the people there stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. And they said, he saved others, let him save himself if he's the Christ of God, the chosen one. And the soldiers, in verse 36, the soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine and vinegar and said, if you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. There was a written notice above him which read, this is the king of the Jews. In verse 39, one of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. Aren't you the Christ? Then save yourself and us. You see what the people are doing? The people are sneering. The people are yelling. They're mocking. The soldiers are mocking. The thief was hurling insults. Save yourself. Save yourself. Why don't you save yourself? But the other criminal, this is verse 40, the other criminal rebuked him. Don't you fear God, he said, since you are under the same sentence? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong. Then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus answered him, I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise. You see, while everybody else is yelling and sneering and mocking and telling him, demanding you save yourself, this one criminal cried out to him and admitted he was a sinner. Hey, we deserve this. I know I deserve this, but this man doesn't deserve this. Did you see how this man just prayed for forgiveness for all these people who are doing this to him? So he recognized he was a sinner, and he recognized that Jesus was innocent, and he recognized there's something special about Jesus, and he cried out to Jesus for mercy. And Jesus, you know, with nothing better to do, you know, he gives mercy. I think, what else is Jesus going to do? He's there dying on a cross. You know, why not forgive another person? And it got me thinking, you know the song, I don't know the words of the song too much, I just know the first line. So you had a bad day, you know, that's, if anybody's ever had a bad day, I'm thinking Jesus is having a bad day here. And I've heard plenty of people before, because you've had a bad day, because you're having a bad day, you justify, you know, I'm just having a bad day, so get out of my way, I don't care what you think, You know, you can justify being in a foul mood. You can justify being mean to people. You can justify whatever you want because you're having a bad day. I think Jesus is having a bad day. You talk about somebody having a bad day. Jesus is having a bad day. He, in my mind, has every right just to kill them all. But that's not what he's doing. On the whole journey, on the whole tour, on the whole way, you see him. He's concerned about his mother. He's concerned about the women of Jerusalem. Now he's concerned about this criminal. He was concerned about his executioners. He's offering them mercy. He's offering them forgiveness. He's telling the criminal, today you will be with me in paradise. Giving him hope. Giving him forgiveness. And then we get to station 12. Jesus dies on the cross. Luke 23, verse 44. It was now about the sixth hour. The darkness came over the whole land until the ninth hour. The sun stopped shining, and the curtains of the temple was torn in two. And Jesus called out with a loud voice, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And when he had said this, he breathed his last. Told you the sign over the cross is the King of the Jews. Well, now the King is dead. The King is dead. Station 13. Jesus is taken down from the cross. John 19, verse 40. Taking Jesus' body, the two of them wrapped it with spices and strips of linen. This was in accordance with the Jewish burial customs. Then station 14. Jesus is laid in the tomb. That's why this place is called the Holy Sepulchre, the tomb. It says in Luke 23, verse 52, going to Pilate, he asked for Jesus' body. And then he took it down, he wrapped it in linen cloth, and he placed it in a tomb cut in the rock, one in which no one had yet been laid. And this is the end of the Via Dolorosa, the way of grief, the way of suffering, the way of pain. And as I try to take you through every station and take you through the scriptures and take you through all that Jesus experienced, I've got just a couple questions that I want to leave us with here. One is, what stands out? What stands out to you? I wish this could be done in such a format where we could really have a good conversation about this for a little while, because I'd love to hear your answers. Is this a waste of time to make this pilgrimage? I mean, this is a pilgrimage people have been making for 1,400 years, 1,600 years. They've been traveling the Via Dolorosa. Why? Why? I mean, who cares? What's the point? So I'm asking you right now, what's the point? Why? What stands out? Was this worth doing? What stands out? What speaks to you? What do you identify with? And an obvious answer here might be, you know, do you identify with Jesus? Because he's the main character here. It's happening to him. Are we doing this so we can identify with Jesus? And I think it might be worthwhile to point out, we don't have much in common with Jesus at all. I mean, why are we doing this thinking that, you know, we're identifying with Jesus? We're not Jesus. We're nothing like Jesus. Would we do any of the things that Jesus is doing on this way? Would we be forgiving of the people who are doing this to us? Would we really be caring about a criminal next to us as this is happening to us? I can't relate to Jesus on this. I cannot identify with Jesus. Maybe you can identify with his mother. Maybe you've experienced pain in your past, and maybe you see this, and you understand her pain. You understand her anguish, and you can identify with Mary, and maybe that would be helpful. Are the women... the women who he spoke to said, don't weep for me, weep for yourselves. Maybe you can identify with these women. Are Simon of Cyrene, somebody who didn't want to get involved? This is none of your business. This is not on your agenda. This is not what you want to do, but you got drug into it somehow, and now it is your business. You're being forced to do something you don't want to do. Maybe you can identify with Simon of Cyrene. I think of Barabbas. I'm thinking, can you imagine identifying with Barabbas when he is miraculously released? And he's got to be thinking, what? How did that happen? And he's running away as fast as he can because he's thinking, something's wrong here. This is a trick. That's what this is. But he's running as fast as he can. He's confused, but grateful. Praising God that he got a second chance. Or maybe you can identify with the criminal on the cross. You know you're guilty. You know you deserve this. And in your dying breath, you're crying out, Lord, have mercy on me. Lord, have mercy on me. And maybe you can identify with the criminal, the good criminal. Can't identify with the bad criminal. I don't know. That wouldn't be us, would it? Or would it? You know, why are we talking about the good criminal? Maybe we have more in common with the bad criminal who's hurling insults at Jesus, mocking Jesus. Maybe we can identify with the soldiers who are mocking Jesus. And we think, I wouldn't mock Jesus. Well, maybe our behavior, not with our words, but our behavior. Think about Judas. We didn't even talk about Judas today, but Judas who betrayed Jesus with a kiss, because Judas loves Jesus. Just offering him up to die. I mean, that's all he's doing. Or Peter who loved Jesus and denies him three times. Or maybe we can identify with Pilate. You know, we so desperately want to wash our hands of this mess. This is on you guys. This isn't on me. This is you guys. You're the bad people, not me. It's everybody else's fault. Maybe we can identify with the crowd. Crucify him. Crucify. This is what stands out to me. As we read this, as we go through this journey, as I'm looking at all these scriptures, what stands out to me is how utterly sinful and rebellious man is. And you see it with the people. Luke 23, he saved others, let him save himself. You see it with the chief priests and the teachers and the law, teachers of the law, the elders. In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law and the elders mocked him. He saved others, but he can't save himself. The soldiers, verse 36, Luke 23, verse 26, the soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine and vinegar, and they said, if you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. The criminal. In the same way, Matthew 27, verse 44, in the same way the robbers who were crucified with him also heaped insults on him. Luke 23, 39, one of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us. So what stands out to me here is how rebellious man is, how hateful man is, how callous man is, how arrogant man is, how ignorant man is. And yet, how compassionate our Lord is. And if you didn't, you got to see it. You got to see on this terrible journey that he was forced to go. You've got to see his love. And you've got to see his concern for others and his resolve and his obedience to his Father when he says, not my will, your will be done. I will do this. He's not happy about it, but if this is what it takes, this is what he will do. And you see his forgiveness. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And you see his mercy for His mother, his mercy for the thief on the cross, his mercy for these women, and because he knows what's going to happen to them in 40 years from now if they don't repent, if they don't turn to God. And notice his restraint. Everybody's yelling at him, save yourself, save yourself, save yourself. And he could have saved himself. But what so many people fail to realize then and now, they don't understand that the only way he could save others was by not saving himself. He came here to seek and to save that which was lost. And he knew the only way to save them was by walking this road and allowing them to do what they do. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous man. Though for a good man, someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were sinners, while we were executioners, while we were Pilate, while we were the crowd yelling, crucify him, crucify him, while we were mocking him, insulting him, trying to kill him, that's when he died for us. Romans 3:25 says, God presented him as a sacrifice of atonement through faith in his blood. Two things you got to see today. This is my hope and my goal for why we're going through this process here. Two things I want you to see. One is God is good, and man is not. I think we buy into the lies of Satan all the time that we're basically good people. We are not basically good people. We buy into this lie from Satan. We've been blinded by Satan because we want to justify ourselves somehow so that we can continue to rebel against our loving God. So we can continue to pave the way to our own destruction. Man is not good. We are sinners. We yell, we rebel, we mock, and we curse a loving God who lovingly and mercifully and resolutely walked the Via Dolorosa so that we could someday, by faith in Jesus, walk on streets of gold. Which we don't deserve. And this is the end of the journey of grief, the journey of suffering, the journey of pain. It actually happened on Good Friday. I know today's Palm Sunday, but I know we weren't going to get a chance to talk about this. This is what happened on Good Friday. But do you realize 3 days later began a whole new journey? A journey that radically changed this world forever. As people repented, as people embraced Jesus Christ as their Lord, as their Savior, as people were filled with the Holy Spirit and allowed the Holy Spirit to lead their life, as people began to love and forgive people the way that Jesus loved and forgave them, this changed the world. It radically changed the world. So it's a journey that changed millions and millions of people's lives. And a journey that could, if you allow it, could change you. To your heart, lead me to